This edition of Culture with Robert Bounds was first broadcast on the 4th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, and welcome to 2016. We're using the new year as an excuse to talk resolutions. What will you do over the next 12 months? Will you get fitter, leave your job, drink less? The new year is always met with the best intentions, but most of us tend to fall short of our targets within sight of the starting rather than the finishing line. I'll be chatting to comedian James Mullinger about the challenges he set for himself in 2016 and how not completing them might leave him with a rather red face on TV.
I have booked Harbour Station, which is an arena in St. John. The last comedians to play there were Jeff Dunham and Jerry Seinfeld. Zero pressure.
Plus, we'll be travelling to Amazonian Brazil for week-long celebrations on the beach. And we'll also send one of our reporters on a quest to Fez in Morocco to find out how an Islamic country rings in the new year. That's all to come on this week's edition of Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. First up, it seems somehow that it was my first professional New Year's resolution to ring up one of the Culture Show's old muckers, comedian James Mullinger, to see how this list-happy stand-up performer plans to spend his 2016. And no stranger to the idea of overreaching himself a little bit, it seems that Mr. Mullinger has got a big number in his eyes. And a stadium. Oh, and it's all going to be on TV. To talk us through the funny side of New Year's resolutions, here's comedian James Mullinger.
Everyone, all right? My speech is called Why I Love St. John for two reasons. One, I love St. John. The second reason is because I'm sick of people from here asking me why I moved here as if I shouldn't have moved here.
I mean, I've actually literally just got back from the gym where there was a queue of people turning up to sign up. Not that I was standing there in the queue laughing at them all, but there is definitely something quite funny about the fact that people put off doing things because they go, well, I'll do it in the new year. You know, well, I was going to quit smoking, but you know, no need to do it now. You know, wait till this random date. But as much as I might think it's ridiculous, people trying to kind of come up with these kind of unrealistic health expectations and putting those things on themselves, I myself have always done news. I mean, to be honest, I do new day resolutions, to be honest. I'm such a habitual list maker that I wake up in the morning, I make a list of things, and if I don't do all those things by the end of the day, I can't sleep and I torture myself. And almost every substantial thing I've done in my life, and I mean by substantial, by that I mean things that I am proud of or things that have made me happy, have all stemmed from New Year's resolutions. On New Year's Eve 2004, I was in a dinner theatre watching some children or teenagers performing and young adults performing in a dinner theatre thing, and I was quite depressed at the time, having something of a quarter life crisis, and I saw these kids and I thought, my goodness, they're up on that, no matter what they're doing during the day, they're up on stage at night performing. Like, it really touched me, and I went down to the bathroom and I looked in the mirror 2004 and said, this year will be the year that I try stand up, and March that year I finally did it. Then moving to that city from London, England, 2 years ago, moving to St. John was a New Year's resolution. I decided that I was sick of London. I wanted a happier life in a quieter place.
Okay, so before we go on to your specific big New Year's resolution for this year, James, let's talk about the spirit in which New Year's resolutions are made. Is this the kind of dark night of the soul that accompanies overindulgence on New Year's Eve, or is this something that you've got? It's kind of an itch that needs to be scratched, and that arbitrary date of the 1st of January rolls around and it feels like the right time to do it? Or is it maybe a bit of both?
There is something ridiculous about it, but at the same time, whatever it takes. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that in life, whatever it takes to make someone do something. So, you know, as ridiculous as it is that someone goes, I'm going to keep, you know, sucking these toxic fumes in my lungs for another 6 months because it's not New Year's Eve yet. As ridiculous as that is, and I am, you know, I am one of those people, but I say that, I still haven't quit. So there's something arbitrary about it, but ultimately, whatever it takes in life, right? I mean, if something positive can come from something, then so be it. And it definitely is the case that for a lot of people, and almost certainly myself included, that having this date of, on that day, I'm going to do this, I'm going to achieve this, new start, the point at which where it becomes negative is when people are beating themselves up for failing and coming, you know, they're putting together these ridiculous lists. Right, I'm going to lose 4 stone in January, I'm going to quit smoking, I'm going to quit drinking, I'm going to quit sex, I'm going to quit everything good in life. I'm going to just give up everything that's good. I mean, clearly that's never going to happen, and they're going to end up hating themselves more. But I think ultimately it's just, if you can use New Year's resolutions as a way to do something positive in your life and with your life, then it can only be a good thing.
All the things on the visa application that you have to do if you want to live in St. John. So first of all, first of this was I was forced to get addicted to Tim Hortons coffee. I know, because you don't know this, but when you visit here and you try it, it's actually a poisonous tar.
Now, when we were organising over the Christmas period to have this chat right at the beginning of January, you had to fit us in between some filming days and stuff. So you have, and just to fill our listeners in, you have a camera crew from CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, following you around to see if you can carry out one of your big main New Year's resolutions. Tell us what the hell's going on here, James.
To give you a tiny bit of backstory, and I don't know how much this is known, I'm a born and bred Englishman, moved to St. John, New Brunswick, which is on the east coast of Canada, 2 years ago. A lot of people said to me moving here that certain things wouldn't be possible. I was told that I couldn't continue my stand-up career here because that it was too small and there's no comedians here. And I always found that an odd thing to say, because you wouldn't say to a plumber, oh, don't go to that city because there's no plumbers there. Well, that plumber's going to clean up because there's a lot of toilets that need unblocking. And I've moved here as a comedian. I'm unblocking a lot of toilets.
It's a fine analogy for your comedy to come under the umbrella of. I like that.
It is. I'm the king. I'm the king of unblocking toilets. You need a toilet unblocked, I'm your man. And a lot of people said that it wouldn't be possible to kind of carry on doing this. And I proved them wrong. And then I wanted to do a show in the big theatre here. It's 1,000-seater. And people here said, oh, you know, no one will come and see that. And I sold it out. So basically, I came here and I was able to sustain what I did in London. But what I want to do is to prove everyone wrong more and go, I want to take it to the next level. I'm a believer that in smaller cities like St. John, because the playing field is more level, you can actually achieve more because there's less competition and people will get behind you locally. And the thing that I find in places like this is that everyone that's good at what they do thrives and does well and is successful and wealthy and lives a good life. Whereas I find in big cities, there's lots of people that we know that are hugely talented and aren't succeeding because of the competition. So I made a resolution which I wanted to take it to the next level. I wanted to do something that I would never have been able to do in England. I could have stayed in England and done stand-up for another 60 years if I'd lived that long. And I would never have got to play an arena. So I have booked Harbour Station, which is an arena in St. John. The last comedians to play there were Jeff Dunham and Jerry Seinfeld. Zero pressure. And funny enough, there would have been pressure if... I genuinely believe that what I'm preaching, and this is the reason behind this, the CBC documentary, which is essentially showing people the real St. John. People think of St. John as the drive-by city. They have this idea of it being a struggling city. And the reality of what I experience day-to-day is very different, which is what, part of what I wanted to do with this documentary film was to show people the real side, but also show that anything's possible. And I'm going to do it. I mean, the weird thing is that there's lots of stuff that I've decided that I'm going to do this year that I'm nervous about. This is the one thing that I'm really not nervous about. You know, we've got a population of 200,000. Can I get 10,000 in there? Yeah, no problem.
And are you letting people know about this via, I mean, obviously there's a CBC series. You're on the airways of Monocle 24, of course, that's going to have people rushing across country in their SUVs to get there.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, this is it. This is the only PR we're doing. So, you know, your global reach, I hope, is across St. John. The honest answer is like everything I've found here, it's the grassroots approach. Like, I've seen big performers come in here and think, you know, I'll do a billboard or anything else. But the reality is that everything here is word of mouth. I would say in a city like London or Montreal or Toronto, very few people are looking at lampposts going, oh, what should I do? Oh, look, there's a rave happening. Oh, look, if I tear this off, I can call this number, I can make $10 an hour from home. Like that's not happening in big cities. Whereas here, we are using our community boards outside grocery stores, outside churches, outside the post office, and setting up venues like that. So, I mean, to give you an example, I want to get 10,000 in there. Here, you can sell out a 1,000-seater venue without paying for any advertising. All the shows I've done, I've never paid a dime for advertising. I've never paid for radio advertising. It's all been either word of mouth or, as I say, putting up posters. So it's a grassroots approach, and it's the same way that almost every successful business owner, from personal trainers to club owners to restaurant owners, to car dealerships that I know here, it's the way they've all built their businesses here. And it's a completely different way of doing business, but it's working.
Will the show reflect the fact that actually this show that's happening in April, will it reflect the fact that it's kind of come off the back of a New Year's resolution that you decided on the spur of the moment to try to pack out the stadium? Will people get a sense of the kind of off-the-cuff nature of this thing, and also that they are treasured members of the audience?
True. I mean, it will definitely form a part of that because of the fact that, as I mentioned, that this city is the city where I decided to make possibly the biggest decision of my life. And before I lived here, this was my happy place. I would come to St. John on holiday. My wife's from here. And so, you know, every summer she'd say, right, where should we go? Mauritius, Maldives. And I'd go, no, I want to go to St. John. It was the one place that I always felt happy. And so it's very telling that it was in this city, in a dinner theatre place on Water Street in St. John, that I looked in the mirror and said, I'm going to make this decision, which was essentially the decision that changed my life. And so that will definitely form a huge part of the show in the 10 years on, I'm going to be paying tribute to the fact that I started my career thanks to a New Year's resolution made in St. John, and now I'm ending it after I failed to sell any tickets for the stadium show.
Another difference between here and England is, of course, in England, if I go to someone's house and they say, would you like a glass of wine? I say, oh, I'd love a glass of wine. And you know what? They give you a glass of wine. There's no caveats, there's no buts. But here in New Brunswick, if you go to someone's house and they say, would you like a glass of wine? There's a sentence they will say that will make your heart drop. And that sentence is, I made it myself!
That was James Mullinger of Yin Canada. Then look out for his documentary, which will air in June on CBC. And you can pick up a vinyl copy of Londoner to Maritime very soon. Only vinyl, mind. The man likes a challenge. And head to jamesmullinger.com for more details and for tickets for that mega show. Stick around, because after the break, we'll be finding out how people around the rest of the world celebrated their new year.
As the day draws down in Europe and the next morning begins in Asia, the Monocle Daily is on hand to bring you up to speed with a one-hour programme packed with news, business and the best culture and design stories from around the world. Our presenting team in London are joined by guests in Monocle's New York and Toronto studios.
There's lots that the US and the international community can do, but it's enfeebled by its diplomatic and political shortcomings.
And as the sun rises from Tokyo to Sydney, we'll take a look at some of the more interesting front pages landing on doorsteps across the region.
The authority of the Chinese Communist Party has been challenged on its doorstep in Hong Kong, and they do not like it.
That's the Monocle Daily, every weekday at 2200 hours London time, in association with UBS.
You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and in this half of the show, we're travelling the world to see how the new year was celebrated. We're going to begin in South America. In one small Amazonian city in Brazil, Alter do Chão, pristine white river beaches made for an attractive place to be ringing in the new year, especially with celebrations that are known to stretch on for more than a week. Monocle's São Paulo correspondent Sheena Rossiter nipped over to join the party.
It's last Sunday of 2015, and crowds gather in Alter do Chão's central square for the last mass of the year. Sounds of church bells and fireworks blend together as a procession gets underway, all part of a New Year's celebration, which stretches out for nearly 2 weeks, starting the day after Christmas and going until Three Kings Day on January 6th. A live brass band makes its way around the dusty street corner as youth dressed in white robes carrying large crosses lead a religious procession dedicated to the town's patron saint, Nossa Senhora de Saúde, Our Lady of Health. This annual year-end tradition has recently been revived, says the town's priest, Andre Carlos. He tells me that this procession, which circles around the city before ending in the main square, wishes good health for all the city and was only revived 9 years ago. He tells me that this traditional year-end procession originally began at the start of the 18th century, when Jesuit priests came to the region as missionaries and would bless the Borere indigenous people for good health for the coming year. For many people here at the procession, good health is a common New Year's resolution, like for 17-year-old Ana Maria Correos. She tells me that she wishes for good health for all, and that violence in the city would stop in the new year, and she hopes that visitors to the city won't bring any violence with them. In terms of her own life, she says that she's perfectly content with how she lives here in Alto do Chão, and doesn't wish for anything for 2016. After nightly festivities centered around the central square with live traditional carimbó music and carnival games, New Year's Eve has arrived, and crowds of people head to Alto do Chão's beach en masse. On the beach, I meet Alessandro de Souza Branco. His New Year's resolution also goes along with the common theme as other locals here.
Every year we ask the patron saint to light up our lives, people from the community, as well as people visiting, and that she protect everyone. For me, I don't have any specific resolutions. I just want to be in good health, and want everyone to have good health.
But New Year's resolutions here do seem to be a matter of perspective. Just over from Alessandro, I meet Herbie Wong, a Chinese PhD student spending New Year's in Alto do Chão, and she gives me her two cents on resolutions.
New Year's resolution. I don't normally make a New Year's resolution. If I want to do something, I just go for it. So I guess just try to be the best of myself.
This is just a sample of the parties that are going on in the region around Alto do Chão. Adara Luz is the latest party hitting these shores here. A convoy of six boats with a number of different activities on board, yoga classes, cooking classes, and cinema showings, this new floating cultural festival is expected to be a standby down the river Tapajós for many years to come. Parked just across the lake on a white sand beach, Adara Luz partygoers trickle out of their boats and get ready to watch the celebrations. And crowds start to go silent and fireworks roar as the time to ring in 2016 arrives. Blending traditional festivities with new celebrations, Alto do Chão's great weather, even better beaches, and exotic Amazonian cultural offerings make it a curious little spot to ring in the new year. Happy 2016, everyone. For Monocle in Alto do Chão, I'm Sheena Rossiter.
Thanks, Sheena. Well, Monocle's resident Brazilian, Gaia Lutz, missed the South American party this year and spent the new year in London, perhaps a slightly disappointing alternative. She thinks the UK could learn a thing or two from Brazil's parties and New Year traditions.
This year, I chose not to go back to my home country, Brazil, for the festive break. I opted to stay in London. Having grown up in Brazil for most of my life, I thought it would be exciting to have a slightly different and slightly chillier experience for once. Or so I thought. Before I go any further into this, I must explain that New Year's in Brazil, or Réveillon as we call it, borrowed from the French, is a massive deal. It is perhaps, alongside Carnival, one of Brazilians' most cherished holidays. As the local saying goes, how you spend your New Year's Eve defines how you will spend the rest of the year. And being a very superstitious bunch, my fellow countrymen and women all believe that. So it is of utmost importance to start the year with a bang. Be it if you're watching the firework display in tourist-ridden Copacabana or at a house party, a lot of planning goes into the night of the 31st of December. Several traditions from local folklore must be respected. The most famous one, perhaps, is wearing white as a praise to the goddess of the seas and water in the African Candomblé belief, Iemanjá. If you're next to the ocean, you'll also place white flowers or candles in the sea as an offering to Iemanjá. While you are at the seafront, another tradition is the jumping of seven waves. After the clock hits midnight, you walk to the shore, take off your shoes, hold up your dress or trousers, and skip over seven waves. During dinner on the 31st, superstition has it you should eat grapes or crystallized and dried fruits for prosperity, whilst chicken and other poultry is a no-no, as they signify regression. Finally, it is a must to wear new and colorful underwear on the celebrated night. Brazilian New Year's is riddled with superstitions, folklore, and tradition. But even for a non-believer like me, it makes the holiday special. Having spent this New Year's in a pub in London, I came to realize how special the holiday is back home. After a couple of pints in what, if it wasn't for the 5-second countdown, could have been any other London night, I went home and thought the UK could use a little superstition and tradition to bring back the magic of the date. Let's just hope my London New Year hasn't determined the rest of my 2016. For Monaco and London, I'm Gaia Lutz.
We're going to finish this week's show with one contributor's quest for a good time in Morocco. The Holy Islamic City of Fez isn't exactly the best place to ring in the Christian New Year, but that's part of the appeal for our reporter Lily Ames. New Year's is notorious for high expectations followed by poor results. So why not escape the pressure in a place where there's no expectations at all? Lily headed to Fez to see how an unplanned New Year in an unknown location might go down.
A quick Google search doesn't reveal much about New Year's Eve celebrations in Morocco. And leading up to our trip, my friends and I were starting to get worried that our attempts to escape the New Year hype would be more successful than we wanted. We arrived the evening of the 30th, 24 hours to New Year's, and no plans. With its 10,000 tiny streets, Fez's old quarter, the Medina, is truly a maze of market stalls and mosques. We book a guide for the day with the hopes of getting an insider's take on the city and how Moroccans celebrate. Abdul takes us around the Medina and reassures us Fez has something to offer on New Year's.
This night you go to the festival.
Where?
To the new town, the biggest hotel in new city.
And there it is. Our first glance at New Year's festivities, Newtown. It's beginning to sound a lot like celebrations back in the Western world, so we decide to look for something more traditionally Moroccan. We meet another man named Abdul, who runs a big textile shop. Abdul reassures us that the Moroccan people celebrate the Christian New Year too.
It's not included in our habitat, but as there is a community here living with us, we partage with them the happiness as we partage also when they are sad. It's like in a home. That is the reason we can visit some friend coming from Europe and living here. We celebrate with them the New Year.
2015 was a significant year for sharing cultures, Abdul tells me.
Best year for Muslim and Christian, because the same day, 24, it was our Christmas.
Yeah.
The same like for the church people. They celebrate the same
the same day.
Yeah.
Something that isn't always shared between the cultures is that glass of champagne on New Year's.
Some people, they can go in some discotheque, drinking wine. Mm. Others, no. It's the same for Christianism. Not all of them, they drink. Mm. But, you know, some people, they lose the way. That's life.
Abdul is keen to give me a makeover.
The magic dresses. What we call the Sinbad kaftan.
Wow, for Christian New Year or for Muslim New Year?
For both.
Ah.
Take your handbag.
But we don't have time to enter the long negotiations involved. We need to head back to the Riyadh to plan our night. When we get back, we notice our busboy on his break. His traditional fez hat is off and he's having a cigarette. He looks like he knows where the party is at. So we ask for suggestions for tonight through Abdul, our guide turned interpreter.
This night, if you want to go to the spectacle, to see the everything, Mr. Al-Khla, his brother here, with you to the restaurant.
There it is, our own private escort. The brother of the Riyadh porter will pick us up. A part of us is excited, but a part of us is also skeptical. Are we being naive tourists, agreeing for someone's brother to take us to Newtown? We discuss our potential plan over a glass of wine we bought at Stansted Airport, potentially our only tipple of the evening. We find an American couple on the terrace, sipping a bottle of Coke spiked with some rum, also unsure of what they've agreed to that night.
We had a chat with the owner before. He mentioned that it got a bit rowdy the last couple of years. So he encouraged us to stay in the Riyadh. We'll see what happens. I don't think there's any actual plan for tonight. We'll just see where the night takes us.
My friends and I decide our night will take some more planning. We go over a list of potential options, resurrecting plans that had been formally discarded. The ruined gardens, the big hotel, that trendy restaurant called Number 7 that does chefs in residences. Our Western sensibilities get the best of us, and we try seeing if that chef residency has some space for tonight. One table left. We decide on the familiar. We say no to the cool porter and turn down a guide to get us to the restaurant. Winding through the streets, people shout bonne année at us, using the French language that binds the West and Morocco. Young men come up and say they have the New Year's party to remember. We turn it down. The tour books all say get lost in Fez, and we do. The streets have a different feel from the day. It seems most of the activity is coming from behind closed doors. And if Moroccans are celebrating the New Year, it is hard to gauge exactly what they are doing. We enter an area with some 20-somethings having a cigarette and ask them where the music we hear is coming from, hoping they will invite us up. They ignore us, and the lack of attention makes us feel like locals rather than tourists. Around the next corner, a group of young children shouts at us, and our tourist status is reinstated. They point us back on track to the street we're looking for.
Thank you, ma'am.
We finally find the restaurant, and find out the restaurant is run by a group of Canadians. We do my favorite Canadian trick and try to find out if we have any shared friends. Of course we do. Although there are many traditions that differ between celebrations in Morocco and the West, one similarity still rings true. New Year's is a celebration with friends and family. Often around a good dinner, which is what we choose to do. The theme of the restaurant is to take local Moroccan ingredients and put a Western spin on them, just like we have put our own Western spin on New Year in Morocco. For Monocle in Fez, I'm Lily Ames.
Thanks, Lily. And that brings us to the end of today's show. We wish you a prosperous and very happy new year from all of us here at Monocle 24. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was Holly, must leave work earlier. Fisher, join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound. Thanks for tuning in.